One of the great American distance runners is Bill Rogers, the American runner and former American record holder in the marathon, who is probably best known for his victories in the Boston Marathon and the New York City Marathon. He won both of those marathons four times back in the late 70s, and his victories made him a hero and also kind of fueled the running boom back in the 70s as well. And after his run in the Boston Marathon in 1975, he was nicknamed Boston Billy. He joins us on Sports Byline, and he has a wonderful book out that I hope you'll check. It's called Marathon Man, My 26.2-Mile Journey from Unknown Grad Student to the Top of the Running World. Bill, let's go back to the start, when you were a kid growing up, because I think when we look at the roots of a person, it gives us some indication of what that person was like as they got a little bit older. Tell me about your childhood and growing up.
Yeah, I was born in Hartford, Connecticut. I have two sisters, my brother Charlie, I ran cross country and track. Charlie and I started that when we were 15, 16 years old, and our best friend Jason Kehoe. And it's kind of a little bit of an idyllic sort of life, you know, because we were in the 60s, kind of able to go out and be Boy Scouts and go hiking and, you know, ride your bikes through the neighborhood. And heck, we even got into catching butterflies and hunting and fishing. We did all that sort of stuff. Not that we were very good at either, but it was kind of an active life. So that was a positive. And you made friends in your neighborhood very strongly. That was the key.
What was it that directed you to running long distances? I asked that because I was wondering whether your body type was one of the things that directed you to cross country. I mean, you weren't the type of guy that was big enough maybe to play football or basketball. Was that one of the things that drove you in the direction of running?
You know, we played all the sports. We were active kids, but we rode our bikes a lot. I think they gave me good cardio work, you know, as a kid. And they had a gym class mile, and I was the fastest kid in the mile for some reason. But yes, I'm an ectomorphic kind of skinny guy. So that was a plus. But the main thing was we had a really good coach, Charlie, Jason, and I, and our Newington High School team named Frank O'Rourke. And he was a former Boston University track guy. So we understood he had credibility, you know, and he didn't push us too hard, Ron. It was just kind of nice and easy. We had fun with our running, you know, and I think that allowed me years later to do well.
Back in the 60s, what was the image of distance running?
It was pretty minute, you know. We were, there was no girls' team, so it was kind of backward in a sense. Our sport was still a 19th century sport back then. There was no prize money in our sport. But on the other hand, it's an Olympic sport, track and field. So there's a lot of power to it. And I remember watching TV and seeing the great Billy Mills of the United States win the Olympic 10,000 meters in Tokyo, and Abibe Bikila from Ethiopia win Olympic gold in the marathon. So I was struck by these athletes, and also Jim Ryan of the United States and Marty Licori, you know, the great milers, which the United States seems to produce in great numbers.
You know, I was reading a story about distance, long distance running, and it was considered a fringe and even a novelty sport for the counterculture. What were they talking about?
Well, I think that it was true in the sense that there was no understanding of the fitness or health side to the sport in those days. I mean, people would say, "Why are you running?" And then they would laugh and say, "For your health," you know, and it was kind of a joke in a certain sense. But I think people have found that really it is that we are meant to move. And there was a great American cardiologist named Dr. George Sheehan. And he always would say, you know, first be a good animal, you know, live your life kind of simply and basically and be fit and be active. And he was right, as we now know through the research in terms of people's health and fitness, that we need to move, you know. And so it's been great to see the running boom keep going and going.
You know, long distance running is such an isolated sport. In other words, you have a lot of time to yourself. And I'm just wondering, when you think about 26.2 miles, the distance of a marathon and everything, how do you have to deal with it from an emotional and a mental standpoint, since it represents such a long period of time of being able to think and just evaluate?
I think one thing, Ron, sometimes it is like that when you're running on your own. But More and more, since over the years, running clubs have gotten huge. I was in Columbus, Ohio last weekend at a Fleet Feet store, and they have a running program there, and there's 1,000 runners in it. It's called Marathoners in Training. And some of them are, you know, older folks, 56 years old like me, and they have a couch potato program, and then they gear you up to run a mile and then a 5K. So everything has changed over the last 30 years. The science of exercise, you know, how to get fit. I mean, this is just grassroots stuff now, but there's still a long ways to go, I think. But it's been an exciting sport. During the race itself, for example, New York City, Boston Marathons, these are intense, phenomenal experiences. That's why these races are in such demand. They fill up the numbers so easily. And sometimes the race goes well. Other times you get hit with tricky weather conditions. Every marathon is a little different. And but both of them were great fun for me, you know, because I'm a New Englander, and New York was pretty close. I love both races. I had great fun there, really. You make a lot of friends for this sport, Ron. That's the ultimate bottom line. That's why I did Marathon Man. It's really the story of our lives as kids, Charlie, my brother, and our good friend Jason Keough, and how we grew up and later became runners and ran Boston Marathon.
I remember in an earlier conversation that I had many years ago, you were telling me back in the early days, back in the 60s, that drivers would throw beer cans at you.
This is sort of true. You know, there's always a little bit of the struggle, you know, sharing the road. And runners, I've learned, of course, over the years, you know, runners are supposed to face the traffic and get up on the sidewalk. And I've always done that. I've always been careful. But it is a tricky thing. I think it was such a new thing. You know, why do people want to run, you know? And people would say to me, why are you running the marathon? You'll never make any money at it, you know? But it was an Olympic sport. You could aim high in this sport. And that's what I think. And everybody gets something from this sport in the sense of how you feel. It lifts you up, you know, psychologically and physically. And you don't need to run the marathon to feel fit, but I think like a 3-mile run, a 4-mile run, something like that. If you can get out and do that 3 days a week, you're doing pretty good, and you feel more energy, you know?
Do you remember when you started to think and take the sport of long-distance running seriously, when you thought, I want to be something special?
You know, what happened was I quit running after Wesleyan University, Middletown, Connecticut, where I went to college, and because I was no longer going to be part of a team. That sort of feeling I had in high school, Charlie, Jason, and I, the Newington High School team, that was lost. And I thought, it was a tough time in the U.S. You know, the Vietnam War was raging, and I think the American people were very conflicted about it, and I was too, and we all were. And so I went to Boston looking for a job, and with Jason, my old track teammate, and got a job in a hospital there. For my selective service obligation, actually, and that was a unique experience. But I saw the marathon. I had become a Winston smoker by that stage. I was not a runner anymore, but I watched the marathon for 2 years, and I finally said, you know, I got to try this.
The person that really kind of mentored you and brought you back, in a sense, was Ambie Burfoot. Tell me a little bit about how you met him and how he influenced you.
Yeah, Ambie Burfoot tied the American record for the marathon in 68. He won the Boston Marathon. He was a Wesleyan senior at the time, only 21 years old. And the rest of us on the team thought Ambie was quite phenomenal. You know, he was one of the country's best cross-country runners. But none of us could train as hard as he could. He had the vision. It was almost like a, you know, in Man of La Mancha, the impossible dream?
Yes.
And you know, he had that record in his room, and I used to listen to him playing it, and I said, what is going on here? And it turns out his high school coach, Johnny Kelly, who was an American Olympian in the marathon, was the last American to win the Boston Marathon in 1957. So Ambie wanted to win it, and following his footsteps, he was his high school English teacher and cross-country coach. Ambie won it. I always remember that. It took me a while to get back and aim for it myself, but there's a strong New England connection to the Boston Marathon.
We only have about 45 seconds before we have a break. What is the best piece of advice from a running standpoint that Ambie gave you?
Ambie taught me that it was just consistency and being steady. It wasn't speed on one day. It wasn't a particular single part of my training that would make me a strong marathoner, but just the day by day, it was like being a bricklayer. Put one brick down, put the cement around it, put another brick down, put the cement around it. Kind of boring sometimes, but you end up running with your friends, you know, and running is really not so boring when you get out there, and particularly if you're in the mix of the race, you know, it's incredible.
A marathon icon and long-distance runner, Bill Rogers, is with us. And when we come back, we're going to talk about one of the most auspicious days in his running career. It happened in 1975, but you can read all about it, also about his life and his career, in his book called Marathon Man, My 26.2-Mile Journey from Unknown Grad Student to the Top of the Running World. We're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline USA Book Corner. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's Sports Talk Show.